This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this whatever. I am your host, Chris Spangle. With me, as always, is Greg Lenz. Greg, how are you?
I am doing well, Chris. How are you?
Oh, I can't complain. How was your Valentine's weekend?
It was excellent. It was quite fun, actually. So I can't complain whatsoever. How was yours?
Oh, good. I had a swell time. I saw you yesterday.
You did. We had a bit of a false start. We had every intention of podcasting, even recorded two intros, before we realized that it was incapable of being recorded.
Yeah, so for whatever reason, the SD card didn't work, so you graciously returned today. But it was always nice to see my Valentine.
You were my Valentine.
On Valentine's Day.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I can't say because this is recorded and may be used against me in the future. So I'm just getting the levels here right at the start. That's why I'm pausing. You know, professionalism.
Yes. Yes.
So we're recording on this cold. It is beautiful outside. It's like 9/11 beautiful outside. But don't give me that face. 9/11 was a beautiful day. Like the weather was it
yes,
nice.
It was a very beautiful 75 degree.
Right. No, day. I'm not an ISIS. But it is like 10 degrees and the wind is ridiculous. Although I don't know for sure, I've not been out.
You haven't been outside today?
I haven't.
I know you were outside yesterday, so I was going to see if it had been 48 hours.
Sunday is not a day to leave your couch.
Right now you have a quite... It actually looks like an Indiana Hoosier blanket.
It is.
It's a tie-dyed t-shirt. Right. And actually, I'm not even sure what's under the blanket, and I'm not sure I want it.
I am lounging as we podcast because that's what Dear Leader gets to do. This is my house, and I'm cold.
You make the rules.
That's right. Oh, well. Lots of good times.
So what's been new with you since we've recorded last?
I really can't get into it. It's complicated.
Well, all right.
How about you?
I have been... I am a new member of the Libertarian Brutalistas.
You've been crowned the king of one of the Libertarian Brutalist groups.
No. I will not go so far as to be crowned king. I was given that
title. You were called a king.
I was called a king by... a member, and my debut did not go so well.
Of course not.
I didn't know that you could out-brutal brutalists. I asked the rules. I said, is there anything that I should absolutely not do? No. They said, you have free reign. And so I hit the one unspoken rule and caused about 600 comment thread of absolute devastation.
Should we say what you did?
No, we should not.
Okay.
We shouldn't, because I really did think, and I blame Aaron Ewert. Aaron, I know you're going to listen to this, so thank you for your support and throwing me right under the bus by not telling me about the unspoken rule and watching me be crucified for about 48 hours.
What you did is so unspeakably brutal and awful that I've been laughing about it ever since. It is worse. There was a picture that we've talked about on the podcast before that signifies 4chan. It's the picture with the old lady, and it's not appropriate. So we were talking one day about 4chan and how 4chan's awful. You'd never heard of it.
No.
And so,
heck, I'd never heard of a meme before I came on this show.
Right, and then Creighton found this picture that exemplified...
what 4chan is.
Right, so if you want to see the picture, message the inbox at the Facebook page at We Are Libertarians, and we'll
send you both.
We'll
send you both.
That's your job, man. You've got those on your hard drive, I know.
I do. And you know what actually made it even worse was that another guy, Jonathan Upton, who I imagine will become a listener, and who I've only recently met... decided to make it his profile picture, and screenshotted something. And what I had made was in the screenshot as his little profile. And The individual it was towards got very upset. And then Jonathan proceeded to troll him and say that he was making it his mascot. It was absolutely hysterical to watch, and I feel like my life is so much better now that I have been introduced to these libertarian brutalistas. They're quite wonderful folks.
If you could, you can't even conceive of how I could sit down and try to think of the most awful, offensive, horrible thing that I could think of, and it wouldn't even come close to what you thought of.
I know. I don't know why that.
You really are a terrible person.
I am, and it was high heat. I mean, I threw one right at the chin, right to dust him off the plate. And boy, doing that as a newbie is a terrible decision.
I was with a new friend.
Yep.
When I met, and you're like, you went to Purdue? You don't even look Asian. Like, you're like, she took it really well. I was like, no, she didn't.
It was a test flare. It was a test flare. And she had mocked my IU hat.
Right.
So I followed the non-aggression principle. I was not going to do it until I have been hit, and then I followed my code, total war, once I've been hit.
You really got to get your stuff together. You're not respectable enough to be on this show.
I'm Genghis Khan of social situations.
Oh, my. Well, I know. People think that Maya, like, so I was thinking about this week. You can now will your Facebook page to a person after you die. And having the all-powerful 5,000 friend account that I do, this is an asset. So,
it is.
So to bequeath it to someone, it's a great responsibility. And so I was trying to think of the person that I could, because I'm going to, in death, do what I do in life, which is troll people on Facebook. And I'm trying to think, well, the obvious choice is Maya. But after you did what you'd done, and you became the king of a brutalist group...
I feel
you're in the running.
I don't know. I mean, Maya is shock and awe. I will do something a little more subtle and I'll undermine and irritate and then hit you with a nuke.
You're a Trojan horse.
I am. I'll come in, you'll never expect it. It'll be fine, it'll be great, and then the next thing you know, I make what I made and it rubs a few people. By a few people, almost everyone, the entirely wrong way, except for a few select few who I am appreciative of.
Really, just inexplicable. So, we tell that story to tell this story. We're going to talk a little bit this week. There's a lot of stuff in the news. There's vaccines, and we could get into all that, but we could... make half of our audience happy and lose the other half, depending on what side we take. And I don't, let's be honest, with the vaccine thing, get your kids vaccinated. I mean, know what's in it. I think parents should have the right to make the choice. I don't think the state should mandate it. But
no.
Given the choice, obviously not being a parent, I say that with a grain of salt, I would get my kids vaccinated. You know, I haven't really looked into all of it because sometimes once you start researching it, it's like it gets conspiratorial. So we just try not to get into all the controversy stuff. It just, I don't know.
It's one of those, it's a difficult topic too because of, like in economics, the externalities of it. So if I don't get my kid vaccinated and for instance, they go to a forced public school, and it spreads around like a virus because two or three other individuals have also not done it yet, but were intending to, then are you committing force against somebody else by not vaccinating that individual?
Right.
So it's not a black or white issue. It's a nuanced and difficult issue to ever come down the side. Realistically, though, like the first guy that ever brought it into question, his research was discredited. And he's been on both sides of the debate and shows up over and over again and... he is not. He's the Brian Williams of the vaccination debate.
But Jenny McCarthy has really nice boobs, so I feel like she's an authority on this.
Arguably, yeah, that's true.
I mean, I always get all of my information from MTV Sidekicks.
It's basically though
Kennedy. I go to Kennedy on Fox News for all my information.
There you go. I mean, there really a difference between Jenny McCarthy and the info babes of the daily hours on Fox News?
That's a joke, Kennedy. If I know you listen. That's a joke. I don't know if she listens, but no. Kennedy has a great new show. Check it out. Gosh. Yeah, so we could talk about that. We could talk about 2016, and we might.
I feel like it's worth talking about just because right now Rand Paul's polling second in Iowa. And I know he's not a libertarian. I know he's a Republican, and I know that libertarians hate him. But he's the most liberty-oriented of the Republicans.
Right. And I feel like we can't talk about Rand Paul if Creighton's not here.
That's true.
He is the ultimate authority, having met, shaken hands with,
...
gently caressed.
Yes.
Rand Paul.
I believe there was a longing glance. Maybe a shared soda.
He accidentally snuggled up to him a little bit as they were getting some cheese off of the and some charcuterie.
He were to win the White House, Creighton would fill Lewinsky's role.
Stop. All right. Too far.
Intern. As an intern, not as anything other. Not going down the gutter.
You'd be Linda Tripp. So we could talk about that. What are some other big issues? There's Jordan bombing ISIS.
Jordan has one of their fighter pilots was decapitated, and their king, who is an absolute great guy. I mean,
so Creighton is to Rand boners as Greg is to King of Jordan boners.
Yes, I was so fired up over the King of Jordan only because ISIS operates within a world where they aren't, they're not beholden to the same rules that everybody else is operating by. And especially in foreign policy. And so you see the developed world leaders, the members of NATO, especially the Security Council, they behave a little bit differently in how they react, especially with, the press releases and the statements they put out. The King of Jordan doesn't do that.
Right.
He decides he's going to play exactly by the rules to the point of getting into his former paratrooper gear, taking propaganda pictures inside of jets and helicopters.
He went full Bush.
He went full, and he even quoted Clint Eastwood in his speech, I believe to, who was it? Was it to their, to their Senate, their version of the Senate, and was like, I'm going to hunt down every last one of them kill them and their families. Quoted that from Unforgiven, and I just thought, this is my guy. I have found the first guy I'd ever considered not making a native-born citizen be president of the United States.
You were so excited.
It was what? Well, no one reacts like that.
You Everyone's love bombs. Like, you love violence so much.
Only once you get hit. Only once you get hit. And then when you do, I think that you're allowed to go unforgiven. You're allowed to go as wild as you want.
So we will have to cover ISIS. Maybe today, maybe some other episode soon. We've talked a lot about ISIS, so go back and look for our history of ISIS, why it matters. But this being a libertarian podcast, Greg's theories on how to deal with the problem of ISIS are a little too
Cheney.
A little worse than that. outside of libertarian mainstream.
They are libertarian completely until the point of contact. Right. They totally are.
It's the whole aggression thing that really chips you up.
I have no aggression whatsoever until hit.
Right.
I want total peace, harmony, trade, all of it. And then when it's hit, your civilization ends.
Yeah. I will say, and there's this whole, are there 300 Marines trapped in some base? Because I've been seeing a lot of Tea Partiers writing about this.
No, they're not trapped. They're over there training the Iraqi army in the fight against ISIS. And so they're there. But let's be honest, we put them there.
Right.
I believe we put them there as essentially to draw. They're not. I don't want to say bait, because the Marines could kick the crap out of ISIS. But they're there to draw them in.
The Gulf of Tonkin, and maybe look up the Wikipedia on that and how that was used to launch us into the Vietnam War. And there were never any North Korean boats anywhere in sight. But
that's too conspiratorial.
Sure.
Even though it's on Wikipedia now.
Right. No, the Gulf of Tonkin, LBJ was an awful human being. If you've read Robert Caro's biographies, which I highly recommend, because if you're going to research politicians and how they think and how they do things, start with the master, the most evil of them all, write to LBJ. Robert Caro writes his books about how power works, how it operates, how it thrives, how it exists, how you get power, how you lose it, how you keep it. And LBJ was a master at that. And Roger Stone, who's a libertarian strategist, longtime Republican strategist, now affiliates with libertarians, just wrote a book on how he thinks LBJ used the Dallas Mafia to kill JFK so he could be president.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how power thirsty this guy was.
And isn't it interesting, since that's who Kevin Spacey studied to do Frank Underwood, how that, it wasn't, obviously the president wasn't killed in House of Cards, but that was essentially, this whole show has been a study in how to become president via the system and power.
And LBJ is responsible for completely rearranging all the traditions of the Senate to consolidate power behind him. He completely changed the committee system. He completely changed seniority. He completely stole and rigged votes so he could maintain power. He owned the media in the area in which he lived, which helped him get elected to Senate. Long story short, read the Robert Caro books, and I don't know how we ended up on this tangent, but I remember now. It's funny. He knew that you become a more powerful president, a great president, a president that stands the test of time if you're a war president.
You have to.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton's, that's what everyone says. It's a shame he never lived in a time where he could have become great, and it's like,
what do you mean?
It's a shame he couldn't have lived and had war.
He couldn't kill more people. I think there are reports of ISIS taking this one town. There are 300 Marines.
They've taken the town. There's advisors. Only one road in. It's funny. It's al-Baghdadi. That's the name of the town.
Right. Yeah.
And so they
head of ISIS or
yeah. Yeah.
Is he still with us? Did we?
Yeah, he's still here.
Okay.
Yeah. He's still alive. We thought.
My namesake.
Yeah. Otherwise, you would be the natural heir.
Oh, al-Spangdaddy.
Al-Spangdaddy. But so they control the town. They've taken the town, and the base is located there. Eight ISIS members disguised as Iraqi army soldiers. And the base is a bunch of smaller bases inside one large base. Eight soldiers tried to sneak in, but then it was snuffed out with surveillance, and they were killed trying to enter the base as fake Iraqi soldiers dressed as them. Which you'll see more and more of, but you know, ISIS isn't so much a threat to an American military base. It's a pretty outsized match,
right? So, you know, look for that. I mean, my personal opinion is that even if there is a siege and the Marines fight, it doesn't give us. They're already gearing for war.
That's what he wants.
You know, he is sending funding options for ISIS to Congress to fight.
Because, you know, he has those 60 days to authorize troops and whatever. And it sounds like what he's wanting to do is authorize funds to almost create an extension of that.
Another indefinite war situation like we've got going. And, you know, we've got to deal with this ISIS problem. We've got to take care of this ISIS problem, you know, because we created this mess when we invaded Iraq and created an indefinite military situation in Iraq that created ISIS, which we now have to deal with again. Like, it never ends. We never learn a lesson.
And if the lesson is intervention spawns an even more hardcore and fundamental opponent, what could possibly be next?
Beyond ISIS.
That's a scary thought.
The JV team, my ass. They may be the JV team because Al-Qaeda, we got into an argument with a Republican friend of ours who's like, after the beheading of the girl from, was it Dallas?
Yeah, yeah. Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Tulsa, Oklahoma. We've got to take them out now. We've got to go in there and we've got to bomb the crap out of them. What? So you're saying that we, because one girl went to the area.
Oh, you're talking about the girl that was in Syria. Sorry. I thought you meant the factory worker here that was beheaded in Tulsa.
No, no, no. I'm talking about the girl who last week.
Yeah, our last American hostage.
Right. You know, it is a tragedy, but to think in terms of revenge, like we have to go over and declare, we have to go and invade them and bomb them and do double tap strikes, and which explain what a double tap strike is.
I mean, Are you talking about the airstrikes?
Yes.
Yeah, so they'll come in and they'll bomb the area, and then they'll just essentially wait for aid and that type of thing to come in, for people to come in for
the remains?
The remains, and then bomb it again.
Right.
Yeah.
And so people who are coming in to help...
who are not the hardened
right
individuals, they're usually just aid workers that are local.
So because one American life was lost, we should increase that. So what makes American lives more valuable than the aid workers in these double tap strikes?
We got to stop aid workers going over there, though.
Why? If you are choosing, I have no hard feeling. Like, I feel sorry for this girl's family. I feel sorry for her. I cannot even imagine the awfulness that she experienced. But she made the choice to go there. She knew the risks. Why would you make that choice? It doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand it. I've seen some conservative goofballs talking about how she hated Israel so much that she might, like, whatever, go die in a fire, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why people don't like conservatives anymore. That's why Republicans are a dying breed, is because you sit there and want to, like, try and make this girl some sort of anti-Israel,
yeah,
you know.
Let's vilify the Syrian aid or the American aid worker as an anti-Zionist Jew hater.
Right.
And that's justification for her to be beheaded by...
I appreciate that this girl's heart was so big that she wanted to go over there and help and,
totally.
And make a difference.
But this isn't a situation where you can help.
This isn't Haiti after the earthquakes there.
No.
This isn't the tsunami. This isn't the Japanese tsunami. This isn't the Indonesian tsunami. This is a very violent situation. And to be a young, pretty American girl going to Syria, it's not necessarily a good idea.
It's the absolute worst imaginable place you could decide to go right now.
Right.
Yeah.
So she made the decision to go. Why does she drag 330 million Americans along with her if she is unfortunately killed?
And the president authorized a highly, highly improbable rescue force with JSOC to
right.
go and try to get her. And the parents decided no.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those, I mean, they didn't want to put any more lives at risk because of that.
Right. So... by dealing with ISIS, you know, so our friend was like, well, we must demand action. Action must be taken. We must do something. It's like, well, what if doing something is the exact problem? What if we just embolden people? Because in these double tap strikes, there is an 8-year-old kid who just lost his father who will, in 10 years, be the next ISIS fighter.
He'll be Baghdadi's heir.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is you're never going to beat them that way. Ultimately, their only reason they're successful is money.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is stop the flow of money.
Right.
They get money. How do they get money? Oil sales. Let them have their success. Let
yeah.
them build their caliphate, and then nuke the crap out of all their oil fields and watch as it withers away.
Stop killing off Tesla, for God's sake.
It's all about dollars, and they aren't going to continue. So, it all kind of ties together, because the new Saudi Arabian king... is the greatest financial broker of all Islamic terrorism in the history of mankind. The guy has had every penny that's ever been gone to terrorism against the United States has been brokered by this guy.
Right.
So this is a good time. You've got him in a high profile position, and he's got a quasi relationship with the United States. We can hold this guy over the fire and draw and find out how every single nickel gets networked, financed, and it ends up in ISIS and Al-Qaeda's hands. Get your enemy as close as you can possibly get him, hold him over the fire, and stop the flow of funds, and this goes away.
I don't believe for a second that we don't already know all that.
I know. But now you've got a guy in a public position where you can... and now he's not just a crown prince. Like, now he's actually a leader, and you can threaten disruption in his state. He's got serious, serious losses that could happen to him now. We've got all the leverage against him. It's time to use it.
Let's be honest. There is a government official right now that gets a paycheck from United States government dollars who listened to the beginning of the show and thought, I wonder what that picture was that Greg made, and already knows by this point in the episode.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure they know where all of the money flows in and out of Saudi Arabia in terms of financing terrorism. So, you know, money is another way. Letting ISIS collapse under its own ambitions is another.
Oh, yeah.
Because ISIS has ISIS is not Al-Qaeda. They're not the same thing. And the problem with Americans, and especially conservatives, is a lot of conservatives have Islamophobia.
Totally.
Where anything Muslim is bad, you know, to the point that we now, it's so bad that we need to somehow cram the president into being a Muslim so everybody realizes how bad he is because we all have Islamophobia, which we here at Weirdo Libertarians don't agree with. I don't view terrorism to be a Muslim problem.
No.
Because a terrorist who uses religion, it's not about religion. Anytime there has ever been, it's like the kerfuffle over the Crusades with Obama speaking at the prayer breakfast last week. The problem that people, they don't understand that when murder, when terrorism, when things are, when killing and wars are started in the name of religion, it has nothing to do with religion.
It's the vessel.
It has everything to do, it is a tool to motivate the masses. It has everything to do with political power and empowering the state. It has everything to do with making sure that the state exists. The King James Bible, was it Wycliffe that we talked about the other day? Where, you know, Wycliffe translated the Bible into English and was killed for it. And then like 2 years later, King James puts out the King James version of the Bible. It had, Wycliffe was killed not because he was a heretic. He was killed because he threatened the state, which at that time was so closely tied to religion that the idea of free thought, examining the scriptures on your own, threatened the actual validity of the entire system in England and the king himself.
Yep.
Because the king was the authority.
Well, he was head of, you know, King of England is the head of the, the Church of England.
The Anglican Church.
Yeah.
And so his death had nothing to do with religion at all. It had everything to do with maintaining the power of the state. ISIS uses religion as a tool. Their goal is to
consolidate power,
build a state.
Yeah.
And their goal for a state is so widespread, so massive, so big that it can never be properly managed.
So diverse.
Right.
That's the killer.
Right.
They can create northern Iraq and Syria and create a theocratic Islamic fundamental state. No, they arguably already have it. They could probably get a functioning economy. We could recognize them as a blah, 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 blah. Whatever. They can have a Sharia. But you're telling me that the Levant, so the northern horn of Africa, Spain, Portugal, Greece, are all going to fall under Islamic rule?
Egypt, Iran, yeah. Iraq.
I mean, all the Pakistan. Way over to India. They just actually took the guy from, they were able to successfully recruit away the leader of Al-Qaeda in Yemen. I think it's Al-Qaeda in, I want to say Libya. And they got him to join their force, and then now they've sent him into India. That's going to be next. Lebanon, Jordan, they're going to try to hit all those, and they're right. going to have a dispute over Kashmir in Pakistan. But
from Punjab to Portugal, you're telling me that, let's just say in a vacuum, without outside pressures, without the outside pressures of the West, without the outside pressures of the King of Saudi Arabia and King of Jordan trying to maintain power, the ruling authorities in Iran,
the Chinese investing billions in Africa to develop it, and they have none of the morals that we do and care about human life.
The Indians who have
nuclear power
and billions of people to throw at this problem. You're telling me that that would work even without those outside pressures. The differences between Punjab and Portugal and the northern horn of Africa and Somalia,
Greece Europe,
it doesn't work. They're going to collapse under their own weight. It is a fool's errand.
It is. And the United States has a hard enough time getting any legislation or ruling period just right. with Republicans and Democrats who agree on like 90%.
So the greatest way to help ISIS succeed is to put boots on the ground and invade Iraq and Syria and nest in another Islamic homeland.
And then watch as we get sick of fighting it and losing money, and then we leave our armory there, which they are. That's how they're already successful, mm-hmm. is the Iraqi army just put down their weapons, and so they took all those. Well, so let's go train some more Iraqi soldiers. These are the ones that won't quit, and they'll invest more funds, and they'll be even better, and right. be even more heavily armed, and be able to actually stop maybe an aerial assault, which they're not able to right now.
Right.
Just doesn't make any sense logically.
So if you are the type of person that believes that government can't effectively intervene in the free markets, that government can't effectively intervene in education, that government can't effectively intervene in your personal and private lives, that the government, when it gets involved in things domestically, it just screws it up. But then you think that they can produce good outcomes in foreign policy where the culture is totally different and people are completely different than Americans. If you think that it doesn't work at home where the culture is the same and the message can be controlled versus it would work in foreign policy where cultures are different, you might be a dumbass.
Yeah. You really, I mean, it's just, it's a, yeah, all it is, it goes back to that desire to control and tinker and, you know.
Right.
It's move paternalism. Move buttons on the board to produce outcomes, and it's not possible.
It
has to be organic or it doesn't last.
Right. And so by invading other countries, by intervening in other countries, libertarians are non-interventionist, which means we don't believe in, now I don't know that you'd call yourself a non-interventionist.
Totally.
But I certainly am. I don't believe in embargoes. I don't believe in restricting the free market and the free flow of money, because what you do when you cut off American goods to a certain economy, let's say Cuba, for instance, you kill their economy, so everybody becomes poor and more dependent on the socialist state in Cuba, and they hate the United States, they're less likely to overthrow their own government.
You give them a villain.
Right. You give the villain. That is why we want to make Muslims the bad guys, because we need them to go and fight a war. That's why we had to make Germans into King Kong and war posters in World War I and World War II. It's because if there's an enemy, then people will donate. It's how you move the masses. And so I don't believe in restricting financial, the flow of money at all. Because if Johnson & Johnson and GE are not going to do business in a place like Iran, or they aren't. And then we
and
as
they
consumers
do anyway. They do it through subsidiaries that aren't subject to the same United States law. So, I mean, you're really, all you're doing is it's vanity.
Right. So, all the way up to bombing, because these double tap strikes, they're horrific, and they shouldn't be done in our name. Now, I am more and more becoming more and more of a hippie, a peacenik, crunchy granola. I eat organic food.
You do.
I like to hang out in a place known as Broad Ripple.
You're growing your hair out?
I haven't been to Applebee's in 2 years. I have cats. I'm wearing tie-dye, for God's sake.
I know.
Okay? I'm literally wearing tie-dye right now.
You're like a vegan Rupert.
Rupert loves his meat, man.
I know.
That guy goes to the fair and gets meat on a stick and eats like 20 of them. So I know that I am becoming less and less in touch with my conservative brethren. But come on, think about it.
And that leads us, you know, right into Brian Williams.
Okay.
Because, you know, that's been the biggest scandal in the news lately. And right now it looks like Brian Williams is 6 months suspended without pay, which isn't going to be a big deal. It doesn't hurt him financially in any way whatsoever. But Brian Williams has shown that nowadays, newscasters and broadcasters are under the opinion they're celebrities.
Right.
And that can't be the case for the efficient delivery of news. You cannot... What are you doing, Reddit?
I'm getting attacked by my cat.
Oh, I gotcha.
My cat is over here like King Kong rubbing on me and attacking...
Like a German in World War II?
Yes. I'm being firebombed by my cat. All right, continue. I'm listening.
No, you're fine. And so Brian Williams has been suspended without pay. I thought it was really funny that they decided not to fire him at all. And then that's actually what kind of triggered, I had messaged Spangle this week. I got, isn't it interesting that now news is so profit-driven that it isn't so much about credibility, is that likability is going to supplant credibility in this case with Brian Williams, because the guy is immensely likable. My mom thinks he's God. She watches the nightly news with Brian Williams, and her and a friend had gone out to lunch this week and were devastated that Brian Williams would lie. And I don't think Brian Williams isn't a bad guy at all. He's a good guy, but Brian Williams is he fell prey to vanity. He was in the moment. He wanted, you know, when people ask him what it was like, he wants to give them that story.
I think it is human nature to want to puff yourself up, especially if you're probably an ego-driven guy like Brian Williams, I would assume, is. He seems like a very decent guy, but you don't get to his level without, you know, being very confident in yourself, let's say. Arrogant, conceited, egocentric, egotistical, egotist. All those words apply to probably Brian Williams.
Yeah.
And so it's only natural to want to fib a little bit. And your mind, you know, you tell a story and every time you add like a little bit of layer to it. And then eventually it's like if you know.
Eventually the internet gets hold of that embellishment and you end up marching at Selma. You end up... pictures of Neil Armstrong's footprint on the moon with Brian Williams saying, "This is my footprint."
Picture of you and Sherman.
Yes.
And Abraham Lincoln surface.
And, yeah. You know, that's what it turns into. But I find the funniest thing about it all to me is that none of it mattered. So this isn't going to matter because he's so likable that he's gonna get that job back, in my opinion. Brian Williams, it may not be right away. Brian Williams may go to the Today Show because it's dying. But Brian Williams, I bet you anything, will be back in the chair on the nightly news eventually.
You know, I don't know if it's at NBC. Maybe they cut him loose. America loves a redemption story.
They love it, as long as he's sincere.
The thing that I have learned is that the news media, and we've talked about how self-righteous journalists are.
Oh, God.
And how much they love their supposed integrity and how much they love to promote themselves. And even the person who works at the Hendricks County Flyer, you know, out in Plainfield, Indiana, with a circulation of 8,000, thinks that they're Woodward and Bernstein. But maybe I shouldn't say that since I have friends that work at the Hendricks County Flyer. I'm a dead man, but what can I say? The Charleston, the Chesterton Post-Gazette. I don't know anybody in Chesterton, Indiana. But I don't know, like, journalists don't generally have a favorable view of Brian Williams, apparently. They all kind of looked at him like he's a news reader. He's just really good at reading. He's not a journalist. And so the infrastructure of journalists didn't really respect him or care, and they all kind of knew that this was all bull. But what are they going to do? The guy is likable. He's liked by the public. And so when it comes to journalistic integrity, I think that's something that the internal journalistic community cares about. But, you know, your mom may not necessarily care about it as much, and they'll love to see the redemption story. So maybe he'll be back, but it does sort of feel like he won't be back at this point. So I wouldn't be surprised if it is all over for him.
How big a role will the journalist play over it being profit-driven? That's my question.
I don't think that the suits at NBC that are seeing their $10 million investment / contract, along with sliding ratings over the last week, I don't think they really care what the newsroom thinks.
That's the way I feel. And that shows me how much that's changed as a culture. You know, Cronkite, Murrow, those guys, they...
That was a very small period of journalism.
It was.
And probably has been mythologized a lot.
Definitely, definitely. But they didn't care that it was a loss leader as much.
No, of course not. No, because it was a way to promote other... It's just like it is now. It was a way to promote everything. So they didn't mind losing money because they were making so much more money because they were the only game in town.
Yeah.
There wasn't cable. There wasn't cord cutting. There wasn't, you know, the internet. And so they could take the hit because, hey, everybody's sorry, guys. they could take the hit because they were the only three or four channels in town. Oh, my. I'll be back. I got to go hit puberty.
I don't know. What's most interesting to me, though, about it all, like regardless of how it works out, is the credibility involved and the credibility given to Brian Williams and the cult worship around Brian Williams and him even having his job is tied to his likability and his ability to promote a message while seeming like a good guy. And he really doesn't have a terribly impressive early background. He's not that Ivy League elitist, like went to GWU and what American Catholic Catholic American University and something like that in D.C. It's right next to GW.
American?
Yeah, well, it's Catholic, like the Catholic University of America.
I knew that Brian Williams was a big liar when he said he was okay with his daughter getting her butt eaten out on national TV.
That
called his credibility into question for me.
You sniffed him out before everybody else.
Easy now. So yeah, he is a very likable guy, and he gets breaks that a guy like David Gregory doesn't.
Yeah, David Gregory got no breaks.
Because he's an unlikable douchebag.
Except he did have a firearm with inside the district and didn't go to jail.
Right.
So the question is, though, like, why is someone like Brian Williams given such credibility? What lesson can be learned from it? His likability. And I think it's a lesson that can be done in libertarianism for selling it, for promoting it, for offering it as a legitimate alternative to conservatism, to liberalism, progressives. What is it that made him so likable, and how can we learn the lesson from that so that we are given the same benefit of the doubt? We're not seen as, you're a Ron Paul fan. You know, mm-hmm. How can we be seen as, well, the libertarians have a solution to this. The libertarians have a credible solution to this. It's been put into practice. It's worked. This is our off-ramp from the existing status quo.
So you want two guys, one who is such a void, a black hole of decency, that he is the king of a libertarian brutalist group, and another person who called conservatives dumbasses. You want the two of us to explain how to be likable.
I think there's lessons to be learned. I'm not saying that you follow our I don't think that we are the pathway. The light, the way, and the path.
It's like Jack Nicholson. Don't you be like me.
Yeah, don't you be like me. You be you. But I do think, though, that there's the way he presents himself, given his back. He was considered a king in the media. I mean,
right.
He goes on Jimmy Fallon, you know, and he does. NBC uses him when they did that Call Me Baby mix-up. Like, and that attributed to his likability. And the reason he's not just canned.
Right.
And in no man's land. And when I look at Brian Williams, I see a decent guy. And so I say, you know, as libertarians, one, what can we really do? We don't necessarily have the ability to influence policy on a grand scale yet. But maybe we do. I mean, we have Rand Paul, who I know is not a libertarian, but, you know, the Don't Drone Me, Stand With Rand. That got people. That got people's attention.
Paul is very likable, and I think that's part of his problem is that he's not inspiring, but he is likable, and he uses social media in a funny way. Yesterday on Valentine's Day, he sent a Valentine's Day card. I think it was to Hillary Clinton, and it was, you know, snarky.
Yeah.
So he does have a very snarky, funny sense of humor, and so he is likable in that way. But he's not inspiring. And then there's Mike Huckabee, who couldn't be more of a paternalistic dick, who wants to tell all those damn black kids to pull their pants up and all those women to stop being such whores with their tampons and their birth control. I don't know why tampons make you a...
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I don't know, but
that's what he said.
I'm letting you go with it.
That's what he said, though. It's a direct quote.
It was taking out of context.
I don't know. Chris Spangle
is taking me out of context.
I think we all can agree Mike Huckabee doesn't understand women, okay?
That would be true.
So likability plays a factor in politics. And, you know, I worked at The Advocates. And The Advocates, they're the people that do the world's smallest political quiz. They're an outreach organization. They're the ones who not only give you the tool to go out and make a good first impression by giving you this tool that gives you an opening, but they also do a lot of training to teach you how to not blow that chance when, you know, how do you make a good first impression for libertarianism?
Once you've got them interested, how do you keep them on the hook and
listening
to you?
Right. We at the time, I didn't really know what this book was, but now I have it, and I've looked through it, and I kind of realize the significance of this book. It's called Please Understand Me Too by David Kearsey. And The Advocates sell that book and quite a few others on personality and personality types and understanding other people. And I think have you ever heard of the Myers-Briggs test?
Oh, yeah. Taken it many times.
All right. What are you?
I am an... I vary. I'm an ENFJ to an ENFP. Okay. Depends.
I am a classic textbook ENFJ. So if you look, if you Google ENFJ and you pull up the first one, you know, personality junkie or whatever it is, you read that and you will know my character and who I am to a T. So why don't you look it up and see what you agree with while I'm talking here.
I'll pull it up real quick. You're an ENFP.
Yeah, so the Myers-Briggs test, I think everybody should take it. And I have found it, as I've kind of mentioned it to friends and they've taken it. For instance, one friend is dating and she took it. And she realized, wow, this really fits me a lot. I am a lot like this. And then started, you know, now she demands it from all of her dates, her first dates. They must take the Myers-Briggs to see what they are.
Bet they're beating down the door.
No, that's a joke. I'm kidding. But it does kind of help you realize, you know, the people around you in your life have these different traits. I never really thought about it in a systematic way. And so what the Myers-Briggs does is it breaks people down into 16 specific types. There is introverted or extroverted. I better pull this up so I don't get this mixed up. There's introverted and extroverted. And it's not just necessarily, are you shy? Because introverted doesn't necessarily mean shy. Or are you bombastic? Because extroverted doesn't mean extroverted in this sense.
No, uh-uh.
So what that stands for is introverted and extroverted is how you process the outside world. For me, as an extrovert, my reality exists outside of my own brain. So the real world is what I see, is who I interact with. I'm very people-centric. I focus on other people.
You are the inspirer. That is your...
What it says?
Yes, you are the... If you'd like me to read it.
Yeah, why don't you read through it a little
bit? So as an ENFP, your primary mode of living...
ENFJ.
Oh, you're an ENFJ?
ENFJ.
I gotcha.
So let me kind of break this down a little bit. It is based on Jungian psychology. So look up Carl. It's spelled Jung, J-U-N-G.
The giver.
Yes, I am the giver.
You are the giver.
I'm generous and thorough, ladies. And so Carl Jung was a student of Freud, who focused mostly on abnormal psychology and what makes people weird. Where Carl Jung was more focused on what makes to be very simplistic, not everyone is a unique little snowflake. Not every person is exactly unique. Now, we all are unique, but as human beings, we have certain patterns. And so he set out to explain what those patterns were. And out of that, he came up with 8 distinct personality traits: introverted, extroverted, feeling,
intuition.
Yeah. So here's the breakdown of them, and then the rational judging. I wish I had actually prepared. I apologize to everyone for being so ill prepared.
You know, I asked you yesterday. I was like, you got a good handle on this Myers-Briggs thing, right? Yeah. You're like, oh yeah, I got it.
Yeah. So there is extroverted and introverted. Then there is sensing and intuition, and then there is thinking and feeling. And then Myers-Briggs, she introduced judging and perceiving. And so now it breaks down into 16 various different categories of personality. And basically, to give you a very brief overview, extroverted, introverted, all this breaks down into how you process information, how you think about information, how you judge information.
It's your frame of the world.
Right. Sensing versus intuition. Most people are sensing. So they think that introverted, extroverted is like half and half of the population in North America. There's some false studies that say it's 75% extroverted, 25% introverted, but those were people who...
were willing to take the test.
Well, they were studied... they studied high school students, which everybody's extroverted in high school, except for most of our listeners. So then there is sensing and intuition. So sensing is a very simplistic breakdown. Is sensing, people think about what goes on in front of the curtain. So if you're watching a play, their mind works in what they see. What events are taking place in front of them. Intuition, intuits think of what is going on behind the curtain. Their mind has the ability to kind of think about those abstract thoughts.
Conceptualize.
Most people are sensing. Most people just think about the events. Now, that doesn't mean that somebody who is sensing can't like sit there and think big thoughts.
No.
It's just that their first impulse is not, what are the motives behind this? What is going on? Whereas an ENFJ, I am constantly thinking, like, what is the meaning behind that? What causes this? What are you doing?
What do you mean when you say that?
Very personal. Yeah. Very paranoid. Then there's thinking and feeling. So thinking and feeling is fairly self-explanatory.
And that's where we differ.
Yeah. I feel things, and then I think about them. Mm-hmm. So when information or something hits me, and some person or something, I go, ah, that feels good, or ah, that feels bad, or ah, I feel like this is not right. I feel like this doesn't match up with my own personal morals and values. And then I think about it and think about their motivation. Whereas most people probably think about it. I'm just a sensitive little baby.
But yeah, I know. So the advocates, so they do, they essentially tell you about your political inclinations. And so I'm sure what they find is that it leans closer to.
Right. Thinking. And then there is judging and perceiving. So that is, how do you like your world ordered? So as an J, as a judging person, it's not a judgmental thing. It's an older term from 100 years ago. I need my world ordered outside of my head. Perceiving people need to process information, to think big thoughts, to think about, to have free thought. I need my world ordered. Perceiving people organize their inner world and care less about their outer world. Look at my place, Greg. I find it to be dirty because I'm not finished cleaning. You walked in and said, what?
Oh, I was like, this place is spotless.
Right. Because I cannot be comfortable to sit and read and think and have those bigger thoughts.
Until it's all ordered?
Until it is all ordered. Like, there is a row of books that is not like the other row of books.
And baby's in a corner?
There's a baby.
Somebody put baby in the corner. Right.
There. That's a long story. There are things that are bothering me in here right now that make me go, I can't really do this podcast until those books are where they belong. Like, it's not OCD. It's just, I need my world ordered to feel comfortable.
Routine. Or, right. You know, you need your structure.
Right. I'm very structure-based, very routine-based.
Whereas for me, it's like, oh my gosh, this place is like, you know, immaculate, sterile.
Right. So... and so perceiving people are a little bit messier. They don't care necessarily. It's all about their inner thought. So it is important, the reason that we mention this, because you should take it, and we want you to take the test and post it on our Facebook wall, because I think it will help you not only understand some things about you, it will also help you understand that, because I never really thought about it. Like, and what this is what Sharon and the advocates kind of teach, and we asked Brett, our friend who works with the advocates, to come on, but he's out at ISFL. People think differently. They process information differently. They think about the world differently. It takes certain conditions for people to think about the world. You know, I don't think people would necessarily. I think if you're a perceiving type, you wouldn't necessarily think, if I want to convince this person to be a libertarian, my table needs to be neat and organized. Because you wouldn't think about that. You wouldn't care what the table looks like. But me, as a judging personality, will walk up and go, I really just want to put these pens in order. You know, that's one very small example.
No, but it's true because, you know, and that plays too as you being the person trying to sell it.
Right.
Because ultimately we're all trying to do the same thing, that's convince people to be libertarians.
Right.
And this is an insight into the playbook. This is an insight into every individual you react with, And then, granted, there's not going to be little litmus tests tests you can conduct in real time that are going to lead tell you the right way to approach this individual.
Right.
You know, maybe they have taken the Myers-Briggs and maybe they know what they are. Or maybe through a conversation with them, you can say, okay, I got an idea of what this person's like.
Right.
And that's going to tell you how you approach them.
Right.
One, anytime you're going to sell liberty, it has to be focused on them. That's the great thing about the quiz. It's all about them. It plays to vanity.
Sure.
But then that's not going to sell them. It's just going to tell them something about it.
Right.
Then it's going to be, all right, now that you know what you are, why are you that way? What do you believe?
Sure.
What matters to you? And if so, the perfect example is like a messy table at a when you're doing a shaking hand event at the Indiana State Fair. You may never even be able to get that person focused on the conversation with you're having if the desk looks messy.
Right.
That person may not be able to like find their calm spot to actually hear you. Until it's an environment where, okay, everything's settled. Now, let's talk about this.
Yeah. INTJs are what most libertarians, INTJs and ISTJs, are the great libertarian masses. So people who, INTJs think about things through systems. They're introverted. They're very inward-focused, system-focused. Very intelligent. They think big thoughts. They love to think about the world as it should be. And then they love to condescendingly tell people why they're wrong when they don't agree with that, which is a very INTJ/libertarian thing to do. And so if you are the type of person who is a thinking person and I am a feeling person, I think about how will people feel in the future? How will libertarianism make people feel? How will when you're richer, I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but libertarians often think if I just explain the perfect governmental system or lack of governmental system and explain how that will work and how these machines fit together, then they'll just get it. Whereas I'm sitting there going, yeah, but what about people? I don't care about that. Will it make people happy? And so there is a huge disconnect between that conversation. Because I'm not thinking about systems. I don't care about systems. The way to sell me is people will be happier. People will have more security. People will be more comfortable because their emotions will be more taken care of.
Their lives will be better off.
Right.
That's the payoff. But that's I think that's what's so frustrating to libertarians is it isn't a question of right. Because if it were, the libertarian message would be widely adopted and there'd be no debates about it. And so I think we saw this a perfect example of this when Young Americans for Liberty had an IUPUI event where they had Dr. Randall Holcomb and Dr. David Friedman in. And Dr. David Friedman wrote in a book, and I believe it's had something to do with machinery.
The Machinery of Freedom, I think it was.
Yeah, Machinery of Freedom. And what it was a systematic look of how an anarchy state would operate and the process the state would go through and withering away and then being set up in the various machinations of the social services.
Right.
And there were two Tea Party conservatives that were sitting right behind us that asked questions because Young Americans for Liberty's got a diverse crowd. And their questions were almost so far off out of left field for Dr. Friedman, he immediately had to turn it right back to his book. And it sounded condescending, it sounded arrogant. And what he didn't realize that being right, in his mind being right, had just lost him two votes.
Right.
And it just made liberty even harder to ever bring into realization.
Right.
And so that's so frustrating to see that. And I know that's an ego thing. You have to say, listen, I know I'm right, but I got to swallow that pride.
Yeah. But to him, it is an important part of his personality to make sure that his ideas are fully understood and accepted. I'm the type of person that, listen, I'm just sitting here talking, and if you're listening to this podcast and you don't agree with me, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't have to be. I may not even be right, because I may completely change my views and have from the first podcast to this podcast to 100 podcasts from now. You know, everything is an evolving, you know, that's why I probably frustrate libertarians sometimes, because I don't sit there and say that I'm right. It's not a matter of being, I'm perfectly egocentric and conceited and arrogant and all that good jazz, but I don't necessarily have to be right. I sort of like want to find out as much information, and information is always evolving, and there may not be a right answer. There may be gray area, which is, I think, a lot of the reason that this podcast is a lot different than other libertarian podcasts, is because we aren't INTJs sitting there condescendingly saying this is the right way.
Yeah, there is. I mean, to me, there is no right way, because libertarianism could be perfectly valid, right? Dr. Friedman's book could be the exact description of how the state would work in a libertarian society, but none of that matters,
right,
if we aren't able to use politics to arrive at that, because that's the vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't, we're in serious trouble, and part of that is sales.
Yeah.
And so when you're talking to someone, and that's to talk about the Myers-Briggs, when you're talking to someone and you're an advocate for something, and it's whether it's online or whether it's in person, you have to be able to, one, attract their interest. That's the great thing about the quiz. That gets them first.
Right.
Second, once you have their interest, you have got to be able to get them to make a decision about whether they think it's valid.
Yeah.
And if they do, you have to be able to turn that on them and say, all right, so would you agree with this? You've given them the results. You can't tell them, though, here's why you believe this. You have to get them to be curious. And so the way to get them to be curious is to say, well, let me ask you this. How have you voted before? You've got to turn it on them and then have them start explaining what and rationalizing their false beliefs and say, well, does that agree necessarily with what the quiz says about you? Once you get them to that point where you've just got them a little bit, you've almost done inception on them mentally, then they're going to ultimately become a libertarian.
I'm a very curious person. I love to ask questions. I ask a lot of questions. Part of it is because my personality, I love to find out what makes other people tick. Oh, you have that. You have this. What causes this? Where did that come from? I'll take you right down the rabbit hole. Like, I used to joke that I was the Howard Stern of my friends, because I would sit there and ask question after question after question, because I want to understand the other person. I want to understand them and how they think. You know, that doesn't come naturally to a lot of people. A lot of people, and the other part that I think people have to accept is there are 16 different types of personalities. You may read yours and not say, this doesn't fit me at all. Take it again, because it probably will when you kind of hit it. But there are things in there are different levels. This is not, you know, it's not 100%. There are different levels. I am an extrovert, but I am a shy extrovert. I don't like being in a room full of people. I'm more comfortable sitting at home and staying at home and being a homebody than I am going out. Or Greg is the most extroverted person I probably know. Greg never sits at home and just does nothing. You know, you're always out doing something. There's always something for you to do, where that would just wear me down. I couldn't do that all the time. But that's okay. It doesn't mean that I need to be more like Greg or Greg needs to be more like me. Acceptance is a huge part of what we're trying to get across, is understand that there are other people that you need to understand, because people are motivated by different things, and that is okay. And you have to accept these personality differences, learn those personality differences.
Learn how to communicate with those different types.
To better influence their behavior. Let's say you right now, this is not just a how to pitch people on libertarianism thing. This is a life thing. You know, if you take let's say you're having marital troubles, or there's a person in your life that it's just not clicking. You don't know how, you don't understand them. You know, find a way to get them to take the test. Now, if you're an INTJ, please don't just go, here's this test, take this. Find a way to bring it up naturally in conversation, have them take the test, and then research ESFJ versus ENFJ communications. I have a dear friend that I love that is an INFJ. We have it is a lot of work for the two of us to talk. And so now that we have learned each other's personality traits, this friend and I get along a little bit better because we have we understand and accept people's personality differences. Just kind of get the more information you have about life, about anything, the easier it is to communicate. So,
in like the perfect way, I would imagine to do that, and I always say play on vanity. So bring it up casually. So I had to take this. I just took this personality test. I'm not sure if I agree. Would you read it and tell me what you think if this applies to me?
Bingo.
If you ask them for their opinion straight out of the gate, they're going to do it. They're going to give you what they think about you, and then they're going to go take it.
And it's almost a gamification thing. So people, as soon as I said this, I'm like this. They go, oh, I want to see what I am. You know, and you watch. We'll post this on Facebook, and people will just be like, it'll go viral because people want to, because it's like the astrology thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like people want to know what their horoscope is, which I think is all total BS. But, you know, there's a little bit of a vanity thing. There's a gamification to it. That's why people want to take this quiz. Now, we're not suggesting set up an outreach booth, give people the world's smallest political quiz, and then make them take a 70 per personality test. But if you read David Kiersey's book, Please Understand Me Too, and it's a great place to start. You'll see that there are four distinct areas. You know, there's the artist, there's the idealist, where I live. There are the systematic people. There are the caretakers. You know, those overarching people kind of fit into those four categories. And so just by reading this book, understanding the 16 different personalities, you can kind of get a sense of where somebody may fit, what might motivate them by asking them just a few questions. Work out those few questions. Greg has, if you go to our website, I think it's still on the slider, The Sales Guide to Libertarianism.
Yeah.
You know, and he has a whole slew of questions that you can ask people.
And it starts at the beginning because, yeah, you know, I just believe that you'll never tell anyone anything, especially if it's an opinion. You are never going to get them to agree with you if you try to get them into a discussion and then make your case. You have to start, you absolutely have to start at the very beginning. And for libertarianism, it's going to start, if it's a friend, it's going to start through, hey, if you're trying to learn their Myers-Briggs personality so you can learn how to communicate, I just took this. Do you think this is right about me? Then they're going to go take it once they tell you what they think. If it's going to be about liberty, it's going to be, well, what is government, though? So does the government have a role in this? Why? How does it?
Right.
Why did government come into being? And then you ask them to create their version of government. What would your government look like? How would you get people to join it? What sort of services would you offer? It's, to me, any person is going to arrive at the libertarian. They're going to arrive either at anarchy or minarchy.
Right.
They definitely aren't going to arrive at state, like big government statism.
Right. Because the point of libertarianism, libertarianism to me is a perfect extension for my personal values. To me, Christianity, libertarianism, they're totally intertwined. The golden rule is one of the most perfect statements of libertarianism there could possibly be. Now, I'm not saying that if you're a Republican or a Democrat, you're not a Christian, all that BS.
Will.
Okay, yes, Greg will. But it's just like we said earlier, I don't believe that I should force anyone to do anything. I don't believe that is I should use coercion. I don't think that I should use an agent to coerce you to live out my beliefs. I think you should live the life that you want to live, and the consequences or the rewards are yours. And if you get successful and I don't, or vice versa, great. We all had an equal start. Government tilts the playing field one way or the other. And so it creates outcomes that are not beneficial to one group or another. And sometimes those consequences are death.
Absolutely.
So to me, libertarianism is perfect because it's live and let live. It's the golden rule. It's an extension of my values. I would never walk up and punch you in the face. I would never murder you. I would never steal from you. I would never, I'd lie to you. Plenty.
But only if it was in your best interest.
Right. but I would never commit fraud against you.
Adultery?
Adultery.
Against me?
I'd adultery against you like you wouldn't believe. I'm just kidding. But my personal values are that I won't hurt you, that I won't steal from you personally. So why would I support a government that does that in and of itself? That is what if you ask most people, like, are you okay with stealing? Are you okay with committing fraud? Are you okay with murder? Most people will say no. But then why is it okay if the government does it? And then they go, oh, very few people are going to be pro-murder. Greg is one of them.
Only as a retaliatory act.
Maya, definitely a fan of murder. Me, not as much.
No, no.
So, you know, and that was what Marshall Fritz, the founder of the Advocates, taught. I mean, and he was, Marshall Fritz is one of the people that you don't know. It is not like a John Stossel, that is not like a Murray Rothbard, but should be, because he is probably, no, definitely one of the most influential libertarians that ever lived. Unfortunately, he passed away a few years ago, but he's the person who, David Nolan, an engineer, came up with the concept of the quiz. Marshall Fritz was the one who marketed it. For 360 days, I think it was, when he started printing the quiz, he was on the road for 360 days, and he just went from town to town to town around the United States and was launching the Advocates, was launching the quiz, and was like the Johnny Appleseed of this quiz, and people got hangers. So Marshall Fritz slept here, and like people still have their Marshall Fritz hangers because that was like his gimmick. He'd go, he'd drop off a hanger, he'd sleep at your house, he'd give you a hanger, he'd give you the quiz. And he would just go from group to group to group around the nation. You know, this is like 70s, 80s. Like, this is late 70s. This is not the age of the internet where it was easy to find these people, you know. And to be on the road away from home for a full year starting this organization and this quiz is dedication. And it's that dedication, that commitment to helping people spread libertarianism, that we got the quiz and millions of people have been converted to libertarian thinking because they have been introduced to a concept and, oh, they've kind of identified with that concept. It's familiar to them. And so they start to consider the concept. And then there are people standing there who can help nurture that concept. But you cannot nurture the idea of libertarianism or any idea without compassion, without understanding, without acceptance, without showing somebody respect, and creating an environment that helps people move in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you have to cultivate that that environment that is even, they're even able to enjoy it.
Right.
They're even able to set, to, and that's kind of what I was hoping with Brian Williams is, in order to do that, our presentation matters.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Williams saved his job because he's so likable. His credibility, which should be the number one priority for a news broadcaster, has been deemed irrelevant, and he's gotten only a suspension because he is so likable, and that should be our lesson. How can we have that likability of a Brian Williams so that people will listen to our message? We can make them comfortable. They will deem us credible because we're so likable, and build libertarianism through that sort of persona.
Right. To be more like us.
I'm not sure we're exactly role models like we discussed earlier.
Right, I know. No, but we, you know, we have created an environment here of friends talking. You've gotten to know our personalities a little bit, what, you know, and it delivers the message in a fun and entertaining way that is not always presentable, not always professional, not always polished, but definitely you can connect with it.
Yeah.
We're not everybody's cup of tea. I have plenty of friends and family who say, yeah, I know you have a podcast, I don't listen. Which I'm fine with.
Yeah.
Because the less of my friends and family that listen, the better, the more I can say.
The more you can call them out.
Right. But if we just were sitting on here and we were just like reading, you and I had written prepared statements and spoke about it, or if this was a podcast of just speeches or lectures, I mean, let's face it, there are a lot of libertarian podcasts that it's just audio of lectures, or it's a conversation between two professors.
Yeah.
And that is great for the INTJs, you know, the people who love systems, the people who love that kind of, but how do they connect to people who are, maybe other people just connect in a different way. And so it's not like we designed it this way, although there is some thought into how this goes into it, but this reflects our personality. And so we are able to maybe reach a different group of people. So it is not saying we need to do what we're not comfortable with. It's we know who we are, what works best for us, how do we create an environment and a delivery system that will encourage people to learn, where it will be more accessible, more relatable, more understandable, and give people the more information.
Yeah. Completely. You know? And hopefully create a little bit of self-sustaining power behind it.
Right.
Because ultimately we want this to be something you enjoy, but then also something that you
I'm
maybe
still
pass
waiting
on.
For that to happen.
That's
by
true
the way.
Too. But also something that is passed on. Say, hey, give this a listen. And you're the person that's offering that is offering the recommendation, has that credibility and that likability that it actually will get a listen. It'll
right.
have an impact.
Right.
Because the more we can do that, the more it spreads, and the more it spreads virally.
Yeah. So bottom line, you do you. You be cool with how you do you. I hate that phrase. But essentially what that means for all the old people in the audience is be yourself. Find out what you enjoy. If you enjoy giving speeches, if you enjoy systems, if you enjoy being behind the scenes, like there's a guy named Michael Schulteis. Michael is never going to get out front, and he would not be comfortable doing public speaking, I don't think. But Michael is the treasurer of the state party in Indiana for the Libertarian Party. He's great at it. He is an amazing volunteer. He just gives a ton of time, a ton of energy, a ton of resources, but he is never going to write a blog post that I know of. You know, he knows his skill set, and he applies his skill set in an area that I hate. I would not want to do what Michael does at all, you know. And the treasurer that I worked with before Michael, Dale, same way. Could not do what he did. Wouldn't like it. Not my skill set. But at the same time, Dale told me a million times, I do what I do, so you can do what you do, because I don't want to trade places. You know? And so we all find our own rules, and we all fulfill those roles and support each other. It's not a competition. You know, it doesn't make the fact that I am a bit of a, let's say I like to put myself out front and be the center of attention, doesn't make my skill set more valuable or less valuable than Michael or Dale, you know? So that is our speech for this week. We should probably start wrapping up here.
Yeah, we'll wrap up. And yeah, you find your role, and then when you're in your, when you're having your encounters, and you are that INTJ or the INFP type, don't get disheartened if you make a perfectly eloquent, systematic case for why libertarianism is correct and it is completely lost on someone. They're not stupid. They don't think like you.
Right.
And so treat them as such. Be aware that don't get down on yourself. Don't get down on the liberty cause. Say, that person is not the right person for me to approach and foster a discussion, but I know someone who is like them. I know someone within our group that's like them. I should have put those two in contact with each other so they could have coffee.
Right.
And that's how you spread it.
Right. If there's a guy at work that you've been trying to reach forever and he's just not getting it, he or she, let's be fair, that's a great example. Maybe that guy, you're just not the person to talk to them.
And there's nothing wrong with it.
You're just not hitting the right buttons.
You nailed your case.
Right. You've done the best you can do. They're thinking about systems and you're thinking about feelings or vice versa. You know, they're looking at the mustard on your tie every single day.
And they can't even focus while you're talking about Rothbard because you had wrinkled up your straw wrapper for your milk and you left it sitting on your tray.
Right.
If you had thrown it away, the person might be, they might have already gone all the way down like through Hoppe.
Right.
You know, but that matters. Approach right. matters.
So you just don't know what makes somebody else tick, but you have a better chance if you read a book like Please Understand Me Too by David Kearsey, or if you go to The Advocates, check out what they're doing, or if you listen to We Are Libertarians, by God. So, all right, let's wrap up. Final thoughts, Greg?
Just one little promotion thing.
Okay.
This week will be the first Liberty and Libations, where I will be doing a one-hour discussion with what's going to be one a week, with an expert, usually around either a news topic or policy discussion. This week's is going to be with Jeffrey Tucker, Dr. Jeffrey Tucker. It's going to be on the Ross Ulbricht trial and the disruptive technology, the disruptive forces of peer-to-peer technology.
Very cool.
So we're going to be recording that either Monday or Tuesday evening. I'm waiting for confirmation, and then it'll be out before the end of the week.
All right, so stay tuned to all the We Are Libertarians channels, and we'll let you know as soon as that hits.
Yep.
Two things. Greg and I are involved in starting an AFF, America's Future Foundation, chapter here in Indianapolis. So if you are listening in the Indianapolis area, look us up, AFF Indianapolis, or message one of us on Facebook or tweet at us personally or at We Are Libertarians, and we'll connect you with that group. Basically, we're bringing in speakers to discuss what the future looks like, creating a libertarian future, and we're going to bring in policy experts who explain what that looks like, as opposed to here's all the problems and let's complain about it. It is not a libertarian specific thing. We're trying to look at a lot of different approaches, just like we do on this podcast. We're working with our good buddy Brett Bittner and Tim McGuire here locally, so it should be a fun time. We had like 35 people at the first one, where we talked about education reform and how great education would be without the government. So get in touch with us, and we'll hook you up with that group. We should be on their website pretty soon, I think. So if you go to AFF, America's Future Foundation, just Google it and find their website, and we should be on there soon. Secondly, most importantly, I want to thank Phyllis Klosinski. Phyllis gave a wonderful gift to We Are Libertarians to support what we do here. I could not believe.
Blown away.
I was just in shell shock when I saw her faith in us and what we do here. So we will also say this at the beginning of the next podcast, but I didn't want to end without saying thank you to Phyllis and for supporting We Are Libertarians. Unbelievable, humbling.
Way too kind.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. No, I'm just kidding. No, Phyllis, you're a true gem. Please check out Phyllis Writes for We Are Libertarians. Check her out on Facebook. She's writing about Senate Bill, I think it's 428,
mm-hmm.
Right now, where Mike Delf, our good old buddy, Mike Delf, has written bill to download information from your cell phone. I think that's the bill.
Yeah.
I slept since yesterday, but yeah, Phyllis has a piece up on We Are Libertarians about it. Please go check it out. And so thank you to Phyllis. Much appreciated. All right. Well, that was a good one. I feel good about that.
We're getting back in the swing of things. We're in the saddle.
I know.
We're starting to get passionate about liberty again.
I think that was like, what, a 2 week span?
Yeah, a little over 2 weeks, all but right. Not bad. We're on the horse.
Yeah. Shove it, all you people who write me and say,
oh boy.
See, that's how you win friends and influence.
That's
liberty.
Right. We just spent an entire show talking about the right way to approach people to sell liberty, and you tell a bunch of people who can't wait to get more of it
to eat a
pipe
dick.
Down.
Yeah. Take your pitchforks and shove them right up your. All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We appreciate it. And as always, next time, we promise to do
better next time.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.